The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
Wednesday morning, the 21st of December. Good morning, with much debate and discussion from now till 11am. This is Michael Reid on LMFM. The government meets today for the last time before the Christmas break. It'll be Leo Varadkar's first cabinet meeting since becoming Taoiseach on Saturday. Ministers will be asked to leave their mobile phones at the door. And there will be much to discuss, with a new climate action plan topping the agenda, a plan that is expected to impact on the way every person lives their life in this country, and a target to reduce car journeys by 20%. Let's speak to Paul Hosford, who's political correspondent for the Irish Examiner. Good morning to you, Paul, and thank you indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. Indeed, the Irish Examiner tells us to watch out for a number of names when the Taoiseach makes this announcement later. What should we expect?
Yeah, good morning, Michael. I suppose the main thing to expect is a very minimal shake-up in terms of who holds what portfolios. In terms of parties, in Fine Gael, you're looking at two names that could be dropped. That's Colin Brophy. He's the current Minister for Overseas Aid and the Diaspora. And you're also looking at Frank Fian. He's the Junior Minister in the Department of Health, responsibility for the drugs strategy. I suppose the thinking within Fine Gael is that there's a couple of people who have kind of put their hand up in this stall term, who could very well be worthy of a promotion. They're the likes of Jennifer Carr McNeill or Neil Richmond. You also have Brendan Griffin, who doesn't have a junior ministry. He was the Fine Gael whip in the last government, I suppose, and when Hildegard Knocton was made chief whip, he was kind of effectively demoted. He'd be looking at whether or not he would be due a promotion today.
He'd have his eye on sport, I see, in the Examiner today.
Yeah, look, everyone has their eye on sport. the junior ministry of the Department of Sport, where Jack Chambers was, he was the chief whip. It's a good news ministry. The senior minister, Catherine Martin, kind of has to deal with the regulatory stuff, whatever controversies come up. But this junior ministry is effectively, you travel the country opening pitches and announcing grants, and it's a very good place to be if you're ambitious, if you want to kind of build a profile, because you get to travel the country, you can speak to your local organisations there, and you're associated with handing out money. And one of the things that the Fianna Fáil that I spoke to over the weekend, they were very keen on, was that when Jack Chambers was announced as having gone into Hildegard Knocton's previous role in the Department of Transport, they were very keen that they would hang on to that sport portfolio. Because if you look at the senior ranks, Heather Humphreys is the Minister for Social Protection, as we know, but she's also the Minister for Community and Rural Development, and it probably doesn't get focused on as much. But that is seen as kind of a good news department. It's recently she was out announcing a fund where 280-odd community centres each got about 25 or 30,000 euros. Some got far more. This is a kind of ministry where you can spread good news into. Okay.
And Brendan Griffin might be hoping for that opportunity, but he's a member of the wrong party by the sounds of it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Anyone in Fianna Fáil, they would be very loath to give up this idea. Names suggested in that kind of either that or that you could split the sport brief and go with a minister for the minister for the Gaeltacht. Thomas Byrne comes up again and again because he's the Minister for European Affairs. Part of the logic is that the Minister for European Affairs will probably come from the Taoiseach's party, the way it was with Thomas Byrne, because they're effectively with the Taoiseach a lot in Brussels, and that you would kind of want to keep that within the party. That's why someone like Neil Richmond, who, as we know, has been very vocal, very strong on Brexit, or someone like Jennifer Carr McNeill might get the nod there. You would have to find somewhere for Thomas Byrne. Thomas Byrne, I was in Brussels last week. Everyone that I spoke to, very impressed with the amount of work that he's done, how hard he's worked. He's put Irish on the agenda at every European Council meeting, so at least one item will be raised in Irish. That's why he's seen as somebody who could go into a standalone Minister for the Gaeltacht kind of role, or a combined Sport and Gaeltacht.
Okay, very good. Yeah, and what about Damien English, another Minister of State local to this radio station?
Yeah, again, this is one where you kind of start to look at what happened in the senior ranks, and the logic was that a lot of these jobs are paired where, if you look at the Department of Finance, you had Pascal Dunne, who was the senior, and Sean Fleming as the junior, so you had the Fianna Gael, Fianna Fáil kind of thing in the Department of Enterprise, Trade and Employment, where Damien English was. You have that, you always had that Fine Gael pairing with Leo Varadkar, with Simon Coveney, and it makes sense that it's as straight a swap as possible that you would probably keep on. There's no real sense, like I've got no real sense that there's a desire from anyone to really shake this up at the junior ranks. If you'd have done it at the senior ranks, if there'd been mass changes, if there'd been even a lot of portfolio swapping, you might see just a refresh. Most junior ministers that I've spoken to want to stay where they are happy enough where they're going. And somebody like Damien English, he would have seen what he and Leo Varadkar did as kind of the start of a lot of work in that industrial rights, industrial relations kind of piece of what the Department of Enterprise, Trade and Employment does.
Very good.
And he would want to see it out, is what I've been told. So I don't, you don't get the sense that there's this massive call for a refresh, that it might just be kind of keeping on the same way that the senior reshuffle went.
Okay, no new junior ministries, is anybody hoping to get the nod and be promoted to junior minister outside of the three names you mentioned there?
In Fianna Fáil, you've got somebody like James Lawless. When the last job came up, it was Derek Cleary stepped in for Robert Troy after Robert Troy resigned. James Lawless would have been the other name in the mix at the time, so he'll be looking whether or not if Sean Fleming stays on. That's kind of the only name that's been mentioned to me who could be that could be swapped around with the Greens. It's more or less settled that their junior ministers, Usain Smith, Joe O'Brien and Malcolm Noonan, will stay where they are in the Department of in the Department of Social Protection and Housing.
All right. When the ministers meet this morning, they'll be talking about the Climate Action Plan, of course. Do you think they'll be talking about Phil Hogan? Phil Hogan was very, very sorry about Golfgate, but he's to be on television tonight, and I'm not sure that he's so sorry anymore, is he?
No, it doesn't appear so. Talked about how, I suppose, he kind of implied that the leaders at the time, Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar, kind of almost stitched him up in a way, made him the public face. But I think, my colleague Daniel McConnell in our paper today kind of writes about how that's a bit of a self-serving revisionism about what happened at the time. If you look at the quotes that are out there from that Sean O'Rourke interview. Mm. Phil Hogan kind of says that it was populist outrage that the government had given in. So I'm not entirely sure in his case, but that's what happened. That's not really how I remember the situation.
Yeah, well, Daniel McConnell doesn't hold back in his article in the Irish Examiner today. And as you say, he goes through, I don't know, a million and one different times that Phil Hogan apologised and quotes the former commissioner on many occasions back when he was sorry. He'll be on with Sean O'Rourke on the telly tonight, apparently not so sorry. Tell us what you know at this stage about the Climate Action Plan. Is there a get-out-of-jail card for farmers?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that people in the government are always very keen to talk about when they talk about things like the Climate Action Plan is that this isn't about going after one sector, and particularly not about going after things like culling herds or anything like that. This is about kind of, re-evaluating and refocusing where we need to be to hit that overall cutting reductions by 2030. One of the things in today's Climate Action Plan will be an aim to reduce the number of car journeys by 20%. You're trying to get to 30% of all cars being electric by 2030. You want to install solar panels on all public buildings, and you're going to do away with free car parking for for public sector workers where the public transport allows. So if you look at some of the government departments in the centre of Dublin, they would have a lot of car parking spaces. The leadership aspect that has been looked at in that is kind of saying, well, if we're going to be telling people that they need to drive less and we're around the corner from a Lewis stop and a Dark station and we've got bus links, does it make sense for us to be providing car parking? So one of the things that you talk to people around, particularly the Green Party, is that they're very, very sensitive that this doesn't become a sectoral battle, that you're not basically saying farming has to do everything as to carry the load. That you look at everything that we do and you say, right, well, can we look at that? I think 20%, cutting 20% of car journeys it's doable if people have the option. One thing that you talk to anyone and they say, yeah, I would like to drive less, but, I mean, I live in a Dublin suburb and my parents live in the next suburb over.
And how do I get there?
Yeah, but there's no bus links.
And that may be turned around by people saying, well, I'd like to drive more, but I can't afford the fuel or the cost of parking.
And this is it. The thing is, if people will vote with their wallets in a lot of these cases, if it's cheap enough to put solar panels on their homes and it takes a little off the energy bill, they will do it. But if it's I think if it's purely because you want to feel better about the environment, people just won't. They won't react to that. So there does have to be that incentive for people to go and do these things.
Okay, Paul, we'll leave it there for the moment, and many thanks for joining us on the show. That's Paul. Thank you. Paul Hosford, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner.
086 1800 658.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
All of the reports tell us to expect transport to be the big focus when the climate action plan is announced later today. Earlier this week, the Irish Times reported that this plan would aim to reduce the national cattle herd by 10%. Ministers have been playing that down ever since, and it does seem as though there will be a move to incentivise farmers to diversify. Let's speak to the president of the Irish Farmers Association, Tim Cullinan, and a very good morning to you, and thank you indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. It appears as though it'll be a carrot rather than a stick you'll be approached with.
Yeah, good morning, Michael. Yeah, and you're right. There was a report floating around earlier in the week that there was going to be a cut of 10% of the national herd. My clear understanding, that will not be the case today. And obviously, we won't know until we hear what comes out of this plan. But, where we are here, we had the law that was enacted back in 2021, and then we had again in July of 2022, each sector got their ceilings or their targets, and we got our 25%. And if you look at that, following on from that, then the minister set up the two groups, the dairy vision food group and the beef and sheep vision food group as well. And I suppose it was an unusual way of doing business, because what happened there was that the minister and the department came forward with a number of proposals and the groups were to work through those proposals. But look, where we are now is working through those proposals and the measures that farmers are currently doing and have adopted, like the low emission slurry spreading, protected urea, using less fertilizer and multi-species grasses and reducing the slaughter age can achieve up to 4 megatons. And to achieve our 25%, we need to achieve 5.7 tons in total. So we're getting we're on the journey. We have a plan. We're getting there. And to get the final 1.7 tons, obviously, there's a lot happening in science. The science is evolving as we move along, and feed additives that can be fed to bovines, you know, to reduce the emissions in particular. This can be easily done, you know, where bovines are indoors all year round. So we have to adopt a system, you know, to suit our grass-based system. And so if we can get that system up and running and more changes are evolvent in the science, well, then we can achieve our 25% before 2030.
Okay. We haven't seen the plan, but do you expect when you do see it to feel that farmers won the argument?
Well, look, it's not about winning the argument here. Like, this is a huge challenge for farmers, and obviously there's going to be huge costs around this as well. And a lot of the measures I'm speaking about is going to mean, you know, farmers adopting the practices they're doing. So obviously there will be funding needed around this as well. But you're right, I think what's very important here is, you know, we have an excellent industry here in this country. Exports this year, I believe, will exceed the 13.5 billion, 170 people employed, you know, from the north of the country right down to West Cork. And that's very important as well, because I suppose if we look at the three pillars in this, you have the economic, social and environmental. And, you know, we are working through the three pillars here to be able to continue producing, you know, the food we produce here in Ireland. And look, we have to engage in this process of climate, because we are an exporting nation. We export to 180 countries, and, you know, our climatic credentials now, along with our food safety credentials, are going to be critically important to ensure, Michael, that we can continue, you know, producing and exporting to countries right around the world into the future.
Some will say that you haven't engaged enough with plans to reduce emissions as the biggest offender of all, with 36% of all emissions being down to agriculture. Is it possible that motorists are going to be asked to pay the price for this get out of jail card for agriculture?
Oh no, and I don't see this as a get out of a jail card. No, as I say, we are playing our role in this, and we're one of a number of a few countries that actually have a plan. And no, if we look at it, transport has to reduce emissions by 50% and energy 70%, and like, it's the government needs to come up with the plan here. And so, you know, I guess I'm amazed, actually, you know, when you look at the plan around transport, it's really about getting more and more electric cars on the road. But the concern we have is, you know, the electricity that has been generated currently, how that is generated, it is still being generated from fossil fuels, either oil or coal. And until, you know, there is a change in that area, it's difficult to see how the other sectors are going to achieve their targets. And, you know, the plan that the government have for energy is about putting more and more solar and wind turbines, in particular offshore. And offshore is a huge challenge. It's going to take a light number of years before planning is achieved, and then actually, you know, putting the infrastructure in place. So I believe that we are the sector that is moving forward. We have a plan now, and the other sectors are actually behind us, and it's going to be a huge challenge for the other sectors to achieve their targets as well.
It seems that there'll be a major push on rooftop solar and a new green electricity tariff. Are they the kind of measures that you're hoping for?
Yeah, absolutely. And in our own association, we are working with Bord Gáis, you know, to come up with a plan where farmers will be able to adopt, in particular, the rooftop solar. And I suppose the change in the budget is there is increased funding for rooftop solar. And I suppose the disappointing part of it is the fact that funding is coming from TAMS, a farmer putting rooftop solar on their farm buildings can't export back into the grid. So that's something we want to see addressed. Now, a farmer can generate the electricity to run their own private home as well. So that is an improvement. So look, it's moving. It's slow. Like, there's a few areas there. And the other area, obviously, is with either solar or anaerobic digestion, any of the gains in emission reduction is not coming to agriculture, it's going to energy production. So, you know, they are concerns we have. So if the gains have to go on the energy side, well then, there needs to be some allowance to the agricultural sector there as well, Michael. You know, if farmers are doing the work. Mm. But I just want to stress again, what's important here is, you know, the industry we have, the employment we have in rural Ireland, you know, it's not in the towns and cities, and it's critically important that that sector is protected into the future.
What about that target of 10%, reducing the national herd by 10% that was reported in the Irish Times? Will you be looking through this plan today to see if it is actually a target, albeit one that is not a stated target? Because we're told that farmers are going to be incentivized to diversify. Could it be just that it's too expensive or not profitable to have cattle?
No. I suppose what the plan is saying is, this is in particular in the Food Vision beef and sheep group, that there's one option there to, you're right, to diversify, or diversification or extensification, and both of them means a reduction. But like, there is no funding on the table yet for any of those plans. But I think, look, our position is clear here.
But if there's funding on the table for forestry, will farmers go in that direction?
Look, that will be a choice that farmers will take. But I think what's important here is, it's about reducing the emissions. And what I said at the start of the interview is, we're on that journey. We can, with the measures that farmers are doing at the moment, we can already achieve 18% of the 25%. Mm. So, and we only got our target last July.
Okay.
So for any sector that has developed a plan to go along with on the journey on this, and remember, this is a target that has to be achieved by 2030. And so we're only at the end of 2022.
Okay,
here.
So does that mean that it wouldn't matter if the national herd was reduced by 10% if it didn't impact on livelihoods?
Yeah, absolutely. Why would we go reducing a sector that can reduce its emissions, you know, from within the number of animals we have at the moment? I think this is the real debate here. Can we achieve a reduction with the existing herd? And I believe by adopting the current measures and more measures, you know, as the science evolves, I believe we can achieve our 25% reduction in emissions by 2030. And I think that's why, look, our job is to protect the sector. And so we want to keep people farming. We want to keep jobs in rural Ireland, so 170,000 jobs. And the other point here is, you know, that we didn't mention, Michael, is, you know, the carbon leakage. The world population is growing. We passed the 8 billion person on the planet only recently. And a recent FAO report clearly demonstrates, you know, that food production across the world is declining. So if we don't produce the food here, well, obviously it's going to be produced in a country maybe less carbon efficient than we are. And, you know, we have the plan now. Mm. And I think it's a positive day for Irish farming that we are working through this plan. And we all know we have to have our green credentials to produce and to export our food. Okay. So I believe we can do this, maintaining the number of animals we have the system at the moment.
Well, we're all to be incentivised, it seems, incentivised out of our cars, or driven out of our cars in the hope that we end up using public transport. Driving is going to become very expensive for everyone, and everyone drives, I suppose. Are you concerned about increases to fuel prices?
Of course I am, and you're right. Driving, all of us, in particular, that live in rural Ireland, it's a huge cost. And it's a huge cost that people in general are borrowing over the last year, obviously since the Russian invasion on Ukraine. And, you know, we've seen what has happened there. And, you know, it's disappointing to see that it looks as if that war is not going to end anytime soon. So obviously you're right, the cost of living, we've seen where inflation is going. It's running at what, 12% I think at the moment. So that's a huge challenge. It's a huge challenge for us all, Michael. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll find out the finer details later in the day. But thank you indeed for joining us in advance and taking the time to be with us on the programme today. That's the president of the Irish Farmers Association, Tim Cullinan.
Call Michael now, 041 983 2000.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it. fit for our current needs and ready for our future ones.
You may have heard Paul Husford of the Irish Examiner mention his colleague Daniel McConnell and his article in the paper today about Phil Hogan's interview, which will be on the telly tonight with Sean O'Rourke. He says Phil Hogan's position now on Golfgate is revisionism, and it's revisionism that is staggering. And in his article today, he says, just who does Phil Hogan think he is? As part of the article, Daniel goes through some of the things that the former EU commissioner said back in 2020. He said, I'm extremely sorry. I wish to apologise fully and unreservedly for attending the Oireachtas Golf Society dinner on Wednesday last night. I want in particular to apologise to the wonderful healthcare workers who continue to put their lives on the line to combat COVID-19 and all of the people who've lost loved ones during this pandemic. I acknowledge my actions have touched a nerve for the people of Ireland, something for which I am profoundly sorry. I realise fully the unnecessary stress, risk and offence caused to the people of Ireland by my attendance at such an event at such a difficult time for all, and I am extremely sorry for this. I acknowledge that the issue is far bigger than compliance with rules and regulations and adherence to legalities and procedures. All of us must display solidarity as we try to stamp out this common plague. Of course, he was sacked or he walked before he was pushed, if you like. Now he's saying that the two party leaders, his own party leader, if you like, Leo Varadkar of Fine Gael and Micheál Martin, the leader of Fianna Fáil, fell victim to a populist wave of indignation, which has proven to be completely wrong. Daniel McConnell in his article also reminds us of some other quotes. One that says, I thus offer this fulsome and profound apology at this difficult time for all people as the world as a whole combats COVID-19. Another quote is, the bottom line is, I made a mistake. I should not have been there. In hindsight, I was wrong. I made a mistake and I should have not gone. He's also quoted by Daniel McConnell in the Irish Examiner today as saying, when I think of all of the people who cancelled weddings or who lost loved ones, a gathering of a number like that in any particular venue at the moment is wrong and I made a mistake. You're welcome to let us know your views on that, given that he's now saying it was only populist tripe and he was treated unfairly. Our telephone number 0419832000, text or WhatsApp 0861800658, email michael@lmfm.ie. Want to mention a text that came yesterday from Margaret, which we didn't get to, about the hospital in Navan. She says, do we live in a democracy? Do we have a democratically elected government to run the country? If so, then why is information being withheld by the HSE with regard to Our Lady's Hospital in Navan and the ED? And moreover, why is our government allowing them to do this? Just in case our government has forgotten what a democratic government is supposed to be like. It's a government elected by the people for the people. Our government is letting down the people who elected them by not releasing the report in full. The people of Meath are entitled to know what's in it. It's our lives and health that they're talking about, says Margaret. Well, thank you indeed for making comment and getting in touch with us. An email came to us yesterday from Paddy, who said, I'd like to point out the total contradiction about overcrowding and safety at our hospitals. If a venue or a nightclub or a bar let in more people than the safety limit allows, they'd be shut down immediately and fined substantial penalties. Yet our hospitals get away with this every day. Thank you indeed. A text then from Martin, who says, if agriculture is the sector that omits most emissions, cuts should obviously be imposed. Why do I have to be penalised for using my car for the sake of not getting farmers to do the right thing and cut the cattle herd by the sounds of things? Even if I have an electric vehicle, driving will become more expensive because of the cost of parking. Farmers want it everyway. Another text then from John, who's in Navan, says, climate change, my eye. We've always farmed the land. It's the most natural thing we can do. So we've some summers that are hotter than others, and we might have a mild winter or a very cold winter, whatever. That's just the way the weather has always been. Thank you indeed. It's an interesting comment. You could say climate denial, I don't know. But it's very much in line what independent TD Matty McGrath had to say about climate change in the Dáil last week.
We have to tackle what's going on with big business and the grips that they have and the conglomerate in the oil business and poor people looking for SEI grants, Minister. Waiting 2.5 years and they don't have the money to meet it and they're frozen in their houses. I mean, this is not, it's not dried up thinking. It's not, it's a lovely pipe dream. And COP27, I won't even go there. You know, if you went there, not I going there, but I mean, I wasn't going to go there anyway. I mean, literally, it's just a farcical. And that's what's going on. And to tell you, we had harder frost and harder winters when I was a Bokolo. And that's not today or yesterday, but we had them. So COP, I don't want climate change and frightened to be, you know what, out of the people and deal with people honestly and openly. Yes, there might be some slight changes, but nothing like we said. We'd had winters, as I said before. 47, 63, 30 feet of snow in my area, in the Nair Valley, my neighbouring parish.
Thank you.
And we talk about climate change today. It's the narrative you want to push and push and to help the people.
All right, that's independent TD. Matty McGrath. Betty says, if Phil Hogan says he didn't do anything wrong, what was he apologising for when he claimed to be sincerely sorry? And why is he being interviewed by Sean O'Rourke? O'Rourke numbered among the elite who thought there were COVID rules for most people in Ireland and completely different rules for the well-heeled attending Golfgate. It's as bad as Hogan. RTE sanctioned O'Rourke. Now he's welcomed back with open arms and he starts with Hogan saying they never did anything wrong to begin with. How is this allowed? It's a question, I suppose, for RTE, but thanks for asking us.
086 1800 658.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity. When and where they show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity. When and where they need it.
Now, Phyllis Murphy of Duffy's Cross in Dundalk is texting us today. Thanks for your text, Phyllis. She says, regarding climate change and farming, loads of questions. Why can't we farm for our own country? When Ukraine was invaded, we had no wheat to make bread. Why don't we have wheat farms? Why do we farm to transport produce like milk and milk products throughout the world? Why aren't we looking at being self-sufficient? Thank you indeed. Frank in touch with us about a text that came in earlier asking why motorists have to carry the load if agriculture is to get off scot-free, saying that that last text blaming the farmers for climate change probably came from somebody who doesn't realise that most of our food comes from the farmers. Thank you indeed for that. Paddy Duffy in touch with us as well. Couldn't possibly read Paddy Duffy's text the way he's written it, but he does say that Phil Hogan is very arrogant, and I think he's very surprised at how Phil Hogan isn't as sorry as he once was, or at least that appears to be the case from the reports about this programme that will be on the television this evening. Now, we're just a couple of days away from Christmas. It's to be one of the busiest Christmases on record for the Society of Vincent de Paul, and Vincent de Paul is worried about the new year as well, as people are overstretching themselves in some cases, and we'll have to make up for that when we get into next year. Let's speak to Nessun Vaughan, who is the chair of SVP's Social Justice Committee. And a very good morning to you, Nessun, and thank you indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. It's been an exceptionally busy year for you and your colleagues.
Yes, indeed. We have record number of requests, or it looks like it. As of the end of November, we had the same number of calls for assistance for the whole of last year, which itself was a record. So, yes, unfortunately, it looks like a record. It's not one we're looking to have broken.
Is it too late if people are looking to think how they'll get across the next week or so?
Yeah, well, we're still open, but I suppose most of our volunteers in the process themselves are getting organised for Christmas, so we're still there. We're still responding. I'll be out myself today just for a few late callers. But we've been taking, you know, requests for Christmas since early November and responding as best we can.
Mm. Okay, and one thing that St. Vincent de Paul always makes sure is that Santi doesn't forget anybody.
Oh, no, not at all. No, and Santi will not forget anyone, no matter where they're from. guests in this country for maybe a short period, or people forced to come here fleeing persecution or difficulties abroad, or people who live here, Santa will certainly come to all people, no matter all children. He will find them no matter where they are.
Okay, and I'm sure St. Vincent de Paul will help Santa find those houses if need be. Tell us about your concerns going into the new year, because it's a very expensive time of year, the best of times, but we've so much with the cost of living and increasing energy prices to contend with now.
Yes, indeed. And I suppose people at the moment, families at the moment, particularly with children, are tend to focus on, you know, making it a good Christmas for their children. So sometimes other bills and utility bills are put aside and not focused on until maybe the new year. And then when they start coming in, and they will be they'll be very high, as you know, because the cost of living increases. When some of the temporary measures are gone, now we know there's more supports out there for people. Utility bills, there are two more tranches to be paid by the state, which we welcome very much. However, when we take away the temporary measures, the once-off measures, many people on low incomes and on social welfare will be facing a real cut in their income, because the social welfare increases in particular weren't enough to keep pace with inflation.
Okay, were the electricity credits enough to help people afford to pay their bills?
Well, I think they go a long way to cushioning the increases over the winter. I won't cover them in full by no means, but they are very welcome measures nonetheless. We would have to say that, but we still are worried about. The impact it will have, because people on low pay, a fixed low pay, be they in employment or be they reliant on state support through social protection, spend a disproportionate amount of their income on utility bills and on basics, on food as well.
Mm. And when people come to you, has something given before they come to you? They had to make a tough decision that you had to eat or heat, type of thing.
Yes, indeed. I mean, people again on low incomes are constantly juggling and saying, well, do I, you know, put enough food on the table? Do I pay the electricity bill to keep the lights on and the heater on? Do I pay my rent? Or which must I sacrifice? And these are the dilemmas that families are facing all the time. But we know that parents in particular will always put their children first. That we know. So we're there to try and support people, get them through this crisis and get them, keep them on their feet.
Okay, and we're talking about a lot of people. 380,000 people unable to heat their homes adequately.
Yes. There was a report there done by the Central Statistics Office that showed, you know, over 870,000 people, in fact, are saying that they've had to do without either nourishing food, adequate heating, or some, you know, quality clothing. And that's an increase of about 180,000 in the survey done in 21.
Have people been using credit cards or going to money lenders? Is that one of your concerns as we go into next year?
Well, the tendency, particularly around Christmas, is to go to moneylenders because people are desperate for cash. Because many people on low income don't have access to credit. And when you're desperate and you want to make the Christmas a nice Christmas for your children, you know, you will go to great lengths to do that. And then you'll worry about it in the new year when you're paying an exorbitant interest rates.
Mm. And in some cases, that will be impossible because of those exorbitant interest rates, obviously. Yeah,
absolutely. Okay.
And that applies, I think, as well to credit cards. The interest on credit cards is phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah. They're very high. Yeah, the interest on credit cards are, but we would urge people not to go to moneylenders if at all possible. You know, let's explore other options.
Okay. It has to be said as well, people are very good and have donated, as they always have, to St. Vincent de Paul, because I think it's worth mentioning that all of us have seen a drop in our income.
Yes, yes. Yes, people are still extremely generous to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, and we had our appeals there coming up to Christmas and that Masses as well, the second weekend of December, where people are very generous. They're still very generous to us, I have to say. We feel very privileged that people would trust us to, with their money, with their donations, and trust us that it would go to those families who are in need. And our only criterion is need.
Okay, and St. Vincent de Paul is there if people are in need, and you're more than happy to help. Thank you indeed for joining us.
Yes, thanks very much for the opportunity to speak, and thanks to all our supporters and our donors throughout the year.
Okay, well, thank you to you and all your volunteers. That's Nessun Vaughan, who is the chair of the St. Vincent de Paul Social Justice Committee. Just some more comments that have been coming to us. Somebody in touch saying, no more phones at the cabinet table. How will ministers ever stay awake if they don't have Candy Crush or something like that to stop them from dozing off? We'd Paul in Navan in touch saying, my wife's car is due for the NCT in the middle of January. The earliest date in our local test centre is for May. What am I to do? Am I to drive to an NCT centre further away, or am I to go without an NCT cert? Can I drive the car, or can she drive the car without one? Well, it's an interesting question indeed, and one that has been of concern throughout the year. I think when you're in that situation, if you apply for the test, print off your booking and have it to display to Gardaí, then they have the discretion at least not to apply the penalty points and fines and so on. But thank you indeed for your message to the programme today. If you would like to make a comment on the programme, as always, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number is 041 983 2000. That's 041 983 2000, if you have something to say and you'd like to call us and let us know. You can also text your message to us, or WhatsApp it for that matter. 086 1 800 658 is the number for texting or WhatsApping. 086 1 800 658, or email michael@lmfm.ie.
086 1 800 658.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
And where that Jimmy Crosby once again. You might remember Jimmy. He was on the programme with us a few weeks ago, telling us that once he had his mortgage with a permanent TSB, but that was bought over by Pepper Finance. And when that happened, his loan-to-value mortgage was switched to a standard variable rate mortgage by Pepper. Jimmy, just remind us, good morning to you, and just remind us briefly, if you would, what that meant in terms of your repayments.
Good morning, Michael. Exactly what that meant in my repayments was that when I was on a managed variable loan-to-value rate with permanent TSB, I was on a fixed rate of 4.3%. So I was led to believe that by permanent TSB, that was the way it was going to be for the rest of the mortgage. As soon as Pepper took over the mortgage, they decided, and it was in writing, they don't provide any of these products. So I was been moved onto a standard variable mortgage, which meant that the mortgage interest rates could go up. Now, when you're on a loan-to-value mortgage, actually, through time, the amount of interest you're paying should come down along with your payments, because the value of your house goes up and your loan to value rate comes down, because that's the way it works with it. So it is. So
okay. So you've seen your interest rates increase, obviously.
Well, my interest rates, I've actually had three letters, and I'm actually expecting another one. I actually thought I might have been here before I went on with you today. I got three different letters in the last few months, telling me that there was three different interest rate hikes. So there was from 4.3% to 5.5%, 1 to 6.3% and 1 to 7%.
So you're on 7% now?
7%, they've moved it up. And they actually, they all came out before they actually even implemented the first interest rate.
Right.
So I got the three of them together. So
okay. Yeah,
it's absolutely crazy.
Because well, I think we all know what that means. Your mortgage repayments have almost doubled. Stay with me, Jimmy. I want to bring in Fine Gael TD Fergus O'Dowd, who has been working on this with you. But before we do that, I want to hear what the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, has to say about it.
My understanding is that when loans transfer, when mortgages transfer, the contractual terms remain the same, that they can't be changed unilaterally, provided the person adheres to the contract. The lender has to honour the contract, but what you're saying to me is that perhaps that's not the case. And certainly if you have individual cases or examples, I'd be happy to examine them and take it up with the Minister of Finance.
That's Leo Varadkar speaking before he came, Taoiseach. Fergus O'Dowd, I think the Taoiseach was pretty clear in his understanding, as he outlined it there. This should not have happened to Jimmy Crosby. What are your thoughts, or what is your understanding of this?
Well, my understanding is exactly what you're saying. I mean, Jimmy has sent me on some correspondence, which I know you've seen as well, and that was a permanent arrangement in the context of the type of mortgage he was on. It was a managed loan to value. And because the amount of money that he owes reduces as he pays off the mortgage, and also as the price of the house, the value of the house goes up, his interest rate should be coming down. And it's entirely wrong and unacceptable that it's almost doubled. And in fact, it could continue to rise, because what is happening is that proper mortgages who act for other people, they're an agent. That the policy is that as the interest rate goes up in the central bank in Europe, they will keep putting it up, which is absolutely crucifying and unacceptable. I know that the central bank have written a Dear CEO letter, which talks about consumer protection, avoiding consumer harm, act in the best interests of consumers. But none of this is happening with Pepper as we speak. Now, there is, I did see a statement yesterday that they are looking at giving fixed interest rates to people who may be in difficulties. But, it's just not clear exactly how that will work.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, it's a scandal. It's a repetition of other mortgage scandals. It's putting people, what it's really doing, if you think about it, if your mortgage doubles in a very short period of time and your income doesn't, which it obviously it won't, it'll put you out of the house eventually. And it'll mean that your house will be repossessed or you'll have to sell it. And then the mortgage lender gets a house, he gets half nothing, essentially, and the person in the house is gone.
Would you agree that Jimmy had a contract with PTSB? That he was on this managed loan to value mortgage and that he would stay on that for life?
That's my understanding. No, I'm not a lawyer. That's the first point.
Okay.
No, Michael. But that's the position I would certainly hold.
But for Pepper to unilaterally change that contract would seem...
It's just an abuse of the powers that they have.
We heard Leo Varadkar there, and you say you have the same understanding as the Taoiseach, that they don't have those powers, that the contract should have moved intact with the loan, and that they should have honoured the contract that Jimmy has. Now, the question I'm leading up to there is there's regulations that govern all of these things. What's your understanding of the central bank's role in all of this?
Well, the central bank is saying, the statement, the parliamentary reply says that they point out the concerns that they have, but they're saying that the adjudicator on these issues at this stage is the Financial Services Ombudsman, and obviously I've been in contact with the Ombudsman, and they require the individual to make the complaint, but I have written to them about the whole position of Pepper.
Well,
and obviously, clearly, if we have to wait the outcome of that, but it's unacceptable. I mean, we've had the mortgage scandals before with the banks.
And, it's very hard to understand that the regulator isn't regulating, though.
Well, what I don't know if you have a copy of the parliamentary question or not. I don't know if you got it there, Michael, but basically the Consumer Protection Outlook says that they should take action to avoid consumer harm. And but the appeal process is actually goes through Financial Services Ombudsman. So when we await the outcome of that, and when that comes, obviously, I would be hopeful that it would be what we want.
Let me go back to Jimmy.
The government will have to act, absolutely.
Jimmy, because you did approach the central bank, didn't you?
Yeah, if you don't mind me saying, Michael, and Fergus, I'd just like you to know this as well, is that I went in and I done an official complaint to the central bank. And I thought, by reading what the terms of the central bank and how they work, I thought that, okay, I'd like to make a complaint here. So I sent them off an email and I wanted to make a complaint. And the email I got back is kind of what Fergus was saying there. We deal with this. But it said the only thing we do deal with is that if a service provider or financial institution are not adhering to their terms or whatever that they're supposed to adhere to, then the central bank becomes involved. I tried to explain this, and I sent the central bank off some paperwork, and I had more paperwork to send off to them. And I explained this in an email again, and they never they just sent back, and they said it has to go through through the financial ombudsman. It's not a something for the central bank, and they never even answered back another email after that. They absolutely shunned, and the central bank state that they are there to watch over and to make sure that these financial institutions are going by the rules. They absolutely wouldn't even, they didn't even give me a hearing, Michael, and that's just been straight up about it. They did not even give me a hearing. And what people have to realise here, we have a serious homeless crisis in Ireland at the moment. Now, I honestly believe, my heart I believe, because as you know, Michael, over talking to you over this amount of time since this has started, that this time next year, exactly what Pepper are trying to do is keep people quiet, keep raising the interest rates. They're not going to be able to afford them, and they're going to turn around and say, OK, we'll just pay what we were paying. But then that affects, the credit rating was bad in 2015 for me. I have built on that and tried to get that into a better position, which I have been able to because I've never missed a payment or anything like that. Now I'm going to run into the situation where I'm not going to be able to afford these extra payments. So what are Pepper going to do? They're going to put me back into where I was all those years ago. And then they're going to say, do you know something? You're not paying us. So the next thing is we'll be receiving letters saying that we want repossess, we want full payment here and now. And if we don't get full payment, we're going to repossess your property.
There's another issue to all of this, Jimmy, and hopefully it won't get to that. That's unthinkable, given that you had this contract that should have lasted for the full term of the loan. But you've fought, you've been fighting this hand and fist, I think it's true to say. But we know that you're not the only one. We heard from Charlie Weston of the Irish Independent about it last week on the programme, and he's been writing extensively about people like you, and you certainly aren't the only person, but there could be many more who don't realise that they were entitled to stay on the original terms that they had with Permanent TSB and some other lenders, I think, but Pepper changed them, and that they shouldn't have changed them.
That's absolutely 100% right, Michael. And that was one of the last things I said on your show the last time that I was on it. And I just turned around and I asked, please, everybody, don't be afraid. If we did get into trouble with mortgages, yes, so what, we did get in. We fought to try and get them right, and we did get them right. And there's so many people out there have made all these payments, and they probably don't even understand that these interest rates and that Pepper, they think that Pepper have the right to keep this going. But Pepper have not got the right to keep this going, so they haven't.
Okay, well, somebody has to pull a halt to it. Fergus O'Dowd, it would seem as though this really requires to be scrutinised. Somebody needs to get in there with a fine tooth comb.
Absolutely. And I fully support Jimmy, excuse me, on what he's saying there. And clearly, obviously, you know, when the doll comes back, I'll be raising this on the floor of the House, because it's putting unfair and unreasonable pressure on people. And people, as Jimmy says, who are in compliance, who are in good standing in terms of the long-term deal that they did, and they haven't reneged or dropped any payments. So, I mean, so obviously we'll see what the financial services ombudsman comes out with, and when that outcome is known, if we're not satisfied with it, you know, it's up to the government to act then, absolutely.
I think that Taoiseach sounded very interested in it. When we heard him speak there, I think he was responding to Piers Doherty, but he said, if you have individual cases, bring them to me. I wonder, would you bring Jimmy Crosby's case to this? He said he'd pass it on to the Minister for Finance, and he'd ask the Minister to act if...
I've raised Jimmy's case with the Minister for Finance. I've sent him on all the correspondence, Pascal Donohue, in relation to Jimmy's case. So Minister for Finance, his office or his department is aware of it.
Okay.
And I've sent, obviously, Jimmy has replied, but I will follow it up with the Taoiseach.
And Michael McGrath now, because of...
Excuse me. I stepped out again, he stepped in again.
Yeah,
but
exactly,
no, it's the same government anyway. No problem.
Okay. Jimmy, this is far from over, but it does seem as though there's the right level of interest in it. How are you feeling about things at the moment?
I have to be honest with you, Michael, and this is, I hope you're, this is for your listeners, and this is for you. It's because of people like you. You actually stuck with me from the very first time I emailed you. You contacted me, and you have kept working on this for me. And Fergus, when I contacted him as well. But you are bringing only, we are very, very lucky, and LMFM are very, very lucky. We're very lucky in the Northeast to have a broadcaster like you who will actually follow up and cares about the ordinary person that's out there, that's trying to make a living, that's trying to do the best for their family, that's trying to work in compliance with everything, and that somebody will actually listen and bring this and help us to bring this and show us the right channels to go. How I feel that Pepper, probably since in the 2 years that they have taken over my mortgage, Michael, maybe, and if you wanted I could get them fully, I would say probably about 200 phone calls. Hours fighting with them. Everything they've done wrong to me, and they just completely keep shunning people and think that this is the way they can deal with people. It's totally wrong, and I'm glad I did not know that the Taoiseach had mentioned this, and I'm absolutely delighted that, and I hope to God, and I, as I said to you, Michael, at the beginning, I am willing to go put all my paperwork forward, so I am. I'm willing to go completely public, and whoever I have to do, and I hope that the people that's listening this morning go back and check if you were on a standard variable rate, or if you had a deal with your mortgage provider, that you will go back and check it and lift that phone. And Michael, something I did, if, I hope I'm not holding you up, on Monday I decided, hold on a second here, I took another thought about this. I said, Permanent TSB are responsible here as well. So they are. So I lifted the phone on Monday morning and I made a complaint, because Permanent T has had a duty of care to me to make sure that when my mortgage was sold, that paper were going to stick to the same thing. And I have the right, it's in writing. Pepper, the minute they took over us, they said, when we took over your mortgage from Permanent TSB, we did not like what Pepper were, or Permanent TSB were doing with you. Now we're just going to move you on to a standard variable rate without any consultation, without absolutely anything. And Permanent TSB should have made sure of that that was not going to happen, and they did. And I'm not the only lender out there that has done this. And this is not the only vulture fund, if you like to put it, that is doing this. So they are. So that's exactly what I want people to know. And thank you again, because you've been absolutely, you've just been absolutely brilliant. And the people of the Northeast are very, very lucky to have you.
No, that's what they, well, that's what they employ me to do, Jimmy, and they pay me well. I'm very flattered by what you said, and thank you very much.
But it doesn't matter, because to me, Michael, it doesn't come across how much you've been paid or what you know what I mean? It doesn't matter how much we can get paid. We can all get paid big, big wages and still not do our jobs. You have absolutely taken this on, and you haven't let it go on me, and you've kept in contact with me, and you've been trying to put me in the contact with the right people. Okay. And Fergus, I will definitely say that Fergus has been very good too.
Well,
I urge your listeners, lift the phone. Don't take a chance. Just, it's not going to harm you anything to lift the phone and check with Pepper want the details of what my mortgage was when it was sold to you.
Okay.
And go back to your original provider and bring this to the people. Because, as you know, Charlie Weston's wards, where this could end up, this is 100,000 people could be involved with this. This could be worse than the Tracker mortgage scandal.
Okay.
And a lot of people could be homeless by this time, or in the court system with their houses maybe being repossessed by this time next year.
Yeah, well, you've really helped all of us to understand it, Jimmy, and it seems to be an awful situation. Hopefully one that will be cleared up, if you like, come the new year. But thank you indeed for joining us and expressing yourself as strongly as you did on the programme as well. And thank you to Fergus O'Dowd as well. Thanks, Fergus, for joining us on the programme this morning. Fergus O'Dowd, Fine Gael TD for Louth and East Meath, and Jimmy Crosby there, who had his loan-to-value mortgage switched to a standard variable rate by Pepper Finance when it took over his loan from Permanent TSB, which has seen his interest rate go from 4.3% to 7%. Jimmy feels that he should be at 4.3%. And if that wasn't going to be the case, he'd have fixed that maybe 2%. But there you go.
Michael at lmfm.io.
Brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
It is the most wonderful time of the year, but not for everyone. Let's speak to Anne Larkin of Dundalk Women's Aid. And a very good morning to you, Anne, and thank you indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. How is Christmas for Dundalk Women's Aid?
Good morning, Michael, and thanks very much for the opportunity to come on again. Christmas for Women's Aid Dundalk, it's an extremely busy time. And it's busy in lots of ways. I'll start with the positive. The local community, business, schools, individuals, hugely supportive of the organisation at this time of year. And the amount of support we get in the form of donations, be it financial or goods, you know, for the use of women and children when they need our service, is just amazing. But I would say that the really important part of that support is the awareness that's there of the issue and the need for of what the needs that women and children have at this time of year. So that's the positive. The other side is that unfortunately there is such need for that support from the local community. It's a strange time of year. We see sometimes there can be a lull over Christmas, and that's where women are doing their utmost to try and keep things try and manage things at home, not to have disruption for the kids, try and keep things calm and all of that. We would traditionally find then between Christmas and New Year, even Christmas night, we would find there could be a lot of calls. And that's the kind of pattern, you know, there can be a bit of a lull and then there'll be a surge. But it will be busy. Even with a lull, it's still busy.
What about drink?
Drink is, that's one of the myths around domestic violence, Michael.
Okay.
Drink doesn't cause domestic abuse and coercive control. It might exasperate it a bit, but like if drink was the cause, the person drinking, you know, they'd be fighting with everyone in the pub and they'd be fighting with everyone on the way home, the taxi driver would be getting grief. But the domestic violence situation is it's when the person comes home. That's where the violence is expended. It's very specific pattern of behaviour and it's targeted at the woman in the home and the woman who fell in love with this man and who is hoping that she will see that man again and is trying to weather the storm that domestic violence is and the change in him that she has seen since she first met him. So drink, it may exasperate things. It may be a more vicious assault. It may be a more difficult time. And it may be that the woman will say, right, she might need to take additional precautions when drink is taken. But drink does not cause domestic abuse. It's a choice in behaviour that's made.
Okay. Very interesting. Terrible at the same time. But what about being cooped up in the house together? A lot of people go stir crazy over Christmas, can't wait to get out on Stephen's Day and that sort of thing.
Yes. Yeah, and like we know ourselves with the stress of Christmas in the best of times. You know, and you were very right in the intro. It's a lovely time of year, and you know, it's out there as a time for families and all that, but it's not all the same for everybody. So the normal stress of Christmas, and then there's financial pressures. And if there's financial abuse within the relationship, that financial pressure is magnified at Christmas for women as they try and put Christmas over for the family, for the kids, things like that. And yes, then being, you know, no routine over the Christmas period, kids on holidays, yeah, more and more tension builds up in the home, yeah.
Okay, well, you'll be there for people if they need to speak to somebody.
Yeah, and that's what I'd love to get out there this morning, Michael, that there's Women's Aid Dundalk is based in Dundalk. There's a service in Navan and there's a service in Drogheda. Around the country, there are 39 domestic violence services that will be open over Christmas. And we'd be saying to women out there, we know what Christmas can be like, and we're there 24 hours a day. So whether it's the middle of the night, the early morning, or whenever, you can lift the phone, even if it's just to talk, even if you just need to talk to somebody and help maybe take away some of that tension for you or that pressure.
And to speak to somebody who understands, and maybe to speak to somebody who isn't a close family member, because, you know, people can be hesitant about doing that, but there is somebody.
Can indeed, and families won't necessarily understand, and so many women won't have told anybody about what's going on at home because they're carrying the shame that does, that belongs to the perpetrator, because they've been made to feel that somehow this is their fault. But any, you can lift the phone 24 hours a day all over the period from now right into the new year, and you'll be, there'll be a trained worker at the end of that line to be able to talk to you, who will believe and support you. And it, so much of the time, Michael, we find that for women, once they can speak, it helps them to clarify their own situation. As I said before, Women's Aid Dundalk takes the approach that when women contact us, they're coming to us from a position of strength. And we have found time and time again that women go to amazing lengths to protect themselves and their children.
And when they contact you, they're in control. You're not going to force them to do something that they don't want to do.
Not at all, no. When women contact us, we very much are led by the women, because the women are best placed to understand their own situation and their safety and the potential for violence or whatever might be the case in the home. So we'd be led by the women. We're there to, we're information and support. We are no way directive. So the women can talk to us, they can explain their situation, or they can just talk. It can just be that they need to talk to somebody.
It can do so much for people. And I know, just with human nature, that there will be women listening saying, I know, and I'd love to, but I couldn't. I'd just like to say, if I could, Anne, that if somebody does call, they certainly won't regret it. It won't do any harm.
It'll do. And Michael, just to let you know, we get many hang-up calls as well.
Yeah.
That women can lift the phone and dial the number, and then they may not be able to begin the conversation.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Mm. The very fact of lifting the phone is a good beginner.
Yeah. Oh, it's
and
a big
it might
step.
Take a couple of attempts to actually talk to the worker at the end of the phone, and that's okay.
It's a big step. Yeah, I know.
It's huge. But we're there.
24 hours.
Right over Christmas, 24/7. And I would say too, like, if you're out there and you're in danger in your own home, the guards will respond. The guards are very aware of the risk to women in their own home. And they are doing an awful lot of work around domestic violence calls and that. So, you know, do feel free. Do be encouraged to ring 999 should you need to, if you're in danger in your home.
But let's give your number now, if we can.
Okay. Our 24-hour helpline, Michael, it's 042-93-33-244.
Okay, 24 hours a day, as you say, 042-93-33-244. And you'll find Women's Aid Dundalk on social media and so on.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Anne, and happy Christmas to you, and thank you for joining us on the programme this morning.
Thanks, Michael, to you and your team.
That's Anne. Thank you. You too. Anne Larkinov, Dundalk Women's Aid.
Call Michael now. 041 98 32000.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it. The Michael Reid Show with Airgrid, managing and developing the national electricity grid so that it's fit for our current needs and ready for our future ones.
Somebody in touch with us to say their mortgage was taken over by Pepper. They were paying €790. That's now €1,200 a month. Thank you. Please stay in touch. Ken and Drogheda, please stay in touch too. Ken saying Pepper doing exactly the same to him. And I think we'll be touching on this, if not giving it extensive coverage in the new year. Avril RD says, well done to Jimmy Crosby for coming on and outlining his case regarding his mortgage. And I hope he continues to fight tooth and nail until he gets a resolution. Not right what these financial institutions are doing, fleecing hard-working individuals. Thank you, Avril. Now let's talk about the Climate Action Plan. That's to be published today. Sinn Féin's spokesperson on climate is Darren O'Rourke, a TD for Meath East, and he's on the line. Good morning, Darren. Thanks for joining us. It seems from the reports, transport is going to be the big focus.
Transport is a particular focus of the reports anyway, Michael, but it's important to recognise that these annual climate action plans will be part of the political calendar now and into the future as a result of the climate action bill that was agreed. This is the first climate action plan that is fully in line with that bill and takes into account the targets that were agreed within government during the summer months, the sectoral emission ceilings. But ultimately, it sets out a major plan, hundreds of actions and thousands of sub-actions that government commit to deliver on emissions reductions. And there will be a huge amount of detail in it, the same as there was last year. But one of the main areas of focus, I think, this year is in relation to transport and the types of measures that government are considering to try and move people out of cars and into public and active travel. But there's a major focus on the punitive, as has been a feature of so much of this government's approach to climate action.
Is so that what you're worried about, that we won't be able to afford the cost of fuel, we won't have anywhere to park, or if there is somewhere it'll be too expensive and we'll be driven out of our cars, but there won't be the buses and trains to take us to where we want to go?
Well that's it, exactly. And I think, I think we project ourselves forward to 2030 and think of where we need to be in terms of the climate and the emissions reductions and the type of steps to take us there, it's clear that, you know, the government's approach hasn't been successful so far. In fact, it's been the exact opposite. Our emissions have increased significantly year on year since they've been in government, not reduced as they were supposed to. But if you take, for example, the proposal that they have to increase the cost of fuel by 65% based on 2018 levels. We've actually been there, Michael. As a result of the Ukrainian crisis, we've seen that type of increase, but it had no impact on the amount of fuel that people are using or the amount of traveling that they had to do because they had no alternatives. So that's a proof positive for me that what needs to be front-loaded here isn't the punitive measures, it's the delivery of alternatives. And that goes across the board in terms of public transport, in terms of energy alternatives, in terms of retrofitting, in terms of absolutely every measure, you know, in terms of agriculture, the alternatives that are there. We hear the talk so quickly turns to the herd number because there's emissions associated with that. But I think we need to reframe it and look at it in terms of, well, what's a sustainable model? What's a sustainable model of travel? What's a sustainable model of housing? What's a sustainable model of industry? Instead of, as this government so readily does, heaps pain on people in terms of carbon taxes and additional taxes, and doesn't provide alternatives for ordinary citizens, and then gives major data centres and major industry a buy ball.
And you have to have buses that arrive on time. And if you're going to get the train, you need to be able to get a seat.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you don't, and I've actually had contact from constituents this morning in different parts of the Meath East constituency saying, we want to do what the government are saying they're intending to do, but we can't because we don't have buses or they don't turn up on time or they're full. There's a cliff edge in terms of prices. If I travel from Belbriggan versus if I travel from Gormanston or Leitrim or Drogheda, we don't have a train service in Navan or Dunshaughlin. There are very many parts of particularly rural parts of County Meath and Louth that have no public transport service at all. And I say rural parts, I mean significant conurbations or significant towns and villages that aren't well served by public transport. So in that scenario, people, you know, and I think it's important, Michael, you'll hear from people who say, I lived in a major urban city. I lived in London. I lived in Frankfurt. I lived, and I never needed a car because the alternative was there. So when the alternative is there, people will use it.
Well, I lived in a city where there were more bicycles than people, and you could take your bicycle on the train in Copenhagen. When the plan is published today, it seems as though there won't be what they were worried about in agriculture. Is that a climb down, do you think?
Well, I don't know. I think there's a growing realization, I hope, within government, and it's like a lot of these things, Michael. I think you can take it in transport, you can take it in agriculture or other sectors. If the alternative isn't there, and if government fail to provide a sustainable alternative, well, then my concern is that they will turn to punitive measures to drive people out of sectors, drive people out of cars, drive people out of certain types of agriculture. And that is not the right approach to take. We've seen it year on year. Like it's Sinn Féin's criticism of the government's approach that every scheme that they have designed hasn't been just or fair. Like, for example, last week I raised the issue with the Minister for Environment that he should be supporting people with increased financial supports for solar panels. Solar panels, I think, on homes, on businesses.
Maybe he's about to. It seems
as
though...
He's not. That's the difficulty. And not only that, he said that he doesn't recognise cost as a barrier. And that's, you know, that's the fundamental problem I have with the government's approach in relation to it. I recognise, which is the point he pointed to, was that it's difficult to get the workforce, and there's a challenge in terms of workforce, and there is a demand, but there isn't a demand there from people who are poor and living in cold homes. And
we'll
We need to have a look at that social justice and just transition element of all of this.
Well, we'll get the detail very shortly. We have to leave it there for the moment. Thank you for joining us, Sinn Féin spokesperson on climate, Darren O'Rourke, TD for Meath East. That's it for today. God willing, we'll see you for our next programme tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. right here on LMFM. Good morning. Bye-bye.
086 1800 658.
The Michael Reid Show, brought to you by Airgrid, managing and planning the national grid so that everyone has electricity when and where they need it.
Eddie Caffrey here, reminding you to join me every Saturday morning for the best in Irish country, ceilidh and ballads on the green scene from 10 a.m. till 1 p.m.